Divisions and arguments are always ugly. They don't belong in families or in business, but they are especially unseemly in Christian churches. We are supposed to be the first glimpse of a new humanity, united under Jesus' gracious rule. We are supposed to be doing good to others and not squabbling amongst ourselves. And yet it's all too common. Churches that are focused in on themselves, arguing away, tragically divided, and doing little good to anybody else. It's not a new problem. When the Christian church on the island of Crete was barely a year old, there was a danger that things might go this way. We've been looking at this little letter of Titus for a couple of months. Paul visited the island of Crete and started new churches there. His usual practice was to appoint local people to lead the church. But in Crete, he had to leave before he had been able to do this. So he left a man behind called Titus. And it was Titus's job to finish things off and appoint those leaders. These leaders were needed urgently. Already there were people on Crete spreading a false version of Christianity. Strong leaders were needed. They had to live out the Christian gospel and have a firm hold on its teaching. And only then would they be able to silence these false teachers and encourage this young church to live out its new beliefs. And today we reach the end of the letter. And that subject of church division pops up. We want to be a united church. That's what Paul wanted for Crete as well. So here then are three steps to Christian unity. First, stay away from distracting arguments. Stay away from distracting arguments. Titus is told in verse 9, but avoid foolish controversies and genealogies and arguments and quarrels about the law, because these are unprofitable and useless. We'll only see the relevance of this for today once we've pieced together the controversies and arguments that Titus was to avoid. Paul is not saying that Titus should stay away from all controversy. He can't be saying that. He's already told him to take on the false teachers, to win the argument, and to silence them. Jesus frequently went head to head with religious leaders, exposing their hypocrisy and their wrong ideas. When Jesus overturned the tables in the temple and set the birds free that were for sale, he was not avoiding all controversy. No, it is not controversy that Titus is to avoid, but foolish controversy, literally moronic controversy. Pointless discussions, arguments about things that don't matter. The word Paul uses may imply that the debates were about things that were pure speculation. Instead of studying God's word, the Bible, and understanding more of what God's told us, they were arguing for views that were pure guesswork. The phrase genealogies and quarrels about the law tells us a bit more. They were reading the Old Testament, but not in the way that Jesus taught us to read it. Instead, it was obscure details from some of the lists of names, sprinkled with some imaginative approaches to very specific laws, and out came some pretty specious conclusions. There are a few Jewish documents that have survived from this period that do exactly that with parts of the Old Testament. Arguing about things that were peripheral, not central. Inventing views by speculation, not humbly reading God's revealed word. Foolish controversies. When you meet someone first, you look at their face. That's how you recognize a person you know. And then from their face, your gaze spreads out to take in the whole person. You don't start by studying the toenail on their big toe, especially if they're wearing shoes. What am I talking about? This. When God caused the Bible to be written, when Jesus lived on earth, God showed his face. In spite of that, some people argue that God is not like he's shown himself to be. And Paul and Jesus were quite willing to argue with such people. On Crete, there were arguments, but they were about God's toenails. Tiny details. And because they were inventing it all, making it up, it was like squabbling over God's toenails when he has shoes and socks on and you can't even see the toenails. And all they're doing is wasting everybody's time. Paul says these debates are unprofitable and useless. They serve no useful purpose whatever. If people in churches start inventing random and obscure views, that is sad. But to quarrel and fall out about it and to fight over it, that's tragic. And that was the problem on Crete. And Titus was to stay away from these debates. Don't get sucked into them. Stay away from distracting arguments, says Paul. But what about today? Well, I don't know many people who derive bizarre views about God from the fact that Lamech was 182 when he gave birth to Noah. But I have seen Christians fall out with one another by arguing over really obscure views on the margins of Christian theology. And if there are also issues that the Bible does not address, it is even more tragic. Should we use the piano, the organ, or sing unaccompanied? Should we have red carpet, blue carpet, or wooden floors? Chairs or pews? Stand or sit for Bible readings in church? How should ministers dress to lead a service? And does it matter if ministers have odd socks on? Now, I wrote that before I checked. No, we're okay this morning. To that last one, yes, it does. But you know what? To all the rest of them, in every single case, it doesn't matter. Or at least, it doesn't matter that much. It certainly isn't something to fall out about. And yet this is the stuff of which church splits are made. There may be arguments for or against a particular view, and at some point we have to take a decision. You need to replace the carpet. What are you going to replace it with? But these are not the most important areas of church life. And if debating them is consuming more than the tiniest part of your energy and attention, then you've been distracted into a debate that profits no one and only leads to arguments. So stay away from distracting arguments, Paul tells Titus, and we should do the same. But second, stay away from divisive people. Stay away from divisive people. That's verses 10 and 11. Warn a divisive person once, then warn them a second time. After that, have nothing to do with them. You may be sure that such people are warped and sinful. They are self-condemned. We've thought about distracting arguments, wasting time and energy talking about nothing. Now it's divisive people. And the problem with these people is that they are not talking about nothing. Look back to chapter 1, verse 9. The new church leaders, quote, must hold firmly to the trustworthy message as it has been taught. There is a body of teaching that Jesus passed down to his first disciples. They wrote it down in what we now call the New Testament. And it's the job of the church leader to pass it on faithfully. The trouble is, not everybody does. So chapter 1 verse 10, for there are many rebellious people full of meaningless talk and deception, especially those of the circumcision group, which just means, by the way, they were Jews. They must be silenced because they are disrupting whole households by teaching things they ought not to teach. The church in Crete is being divided. One household after another decides they prefer these new ideas to the ones that Jesus and Paul taught. And the problem is they are not arguing about frivolities. Their topics are right at the heart of the Christian faith. And Titus is to warn such people. Then warn them again. Then leave them alone. Is Titus judging them? No. They've done that themselves. They have chosen to persist in teaching a Christianity other than the original. They've ignored two warnings about it. So they are warped, they're out of shape, and they're sinful. They're defying the living God. They are self-condemned. So stay away from divisive people. Imagine that the Coca-Cola company has a new marketing director. He's been in post for a month, and in that time he's taken the microphone at several press conferences and at various high-profile product launches. At each one, he's been seen drinking from a can of Pepsi. He clearly prefers the drink. Now, we would say, wouldn't we, he's free to drink whatever soft drink he wishes. It is entirely his business to have his own preferences about soft drinks. That's his choice. But he's in the wrong job. He has no business promoting Pepsi within the confines of the Coca-Cola company. That's the trouble with these folk in the Cretan churches. We might say they're entitled to their views about God. But their views run contrary to those of Jesus and his apostles, so they have no business promoting those views within the confines of the Christian church. To do so is divisive. Stay away from divisive people. Sometimes it can be hard to see who started an argument. Any parent who's had or who has small children knows that sometimes working out who started the argument is not simple. Picture Titus and the other church leaders refuting these false teachers. I'm sure that some people would have accused them of being the divisive ones. Look, they're always arguing. So contentious. If only they'd just leave those poor people alone, we would be a happy, united church. But Titus and the church leaders didn't start any arguments. That was the people who branched off on their own. By abandoning the Christianity of Jesus, they sowed division in the church. And when Titus and others seek to reply, they are restoring harmony by bringing the whole church back to the unity that comes from following, little illusion here, the real Jesus. So Titus is told, stay away from divisive people. And it's the same today. If people start sowing their own brand of Christianity, which is not what Jesus and his apostles taught, they're divisive. And Paul would ask us to ignore them. Don't give them a platform. Don't let their views spread. Leave them alone. Stay away from distracting arguments. Stay away from divisive people. Those are the negative instructions that Paul gives Titus. The third is positive. Soak up the life-saving gospel. Soak up the life-saving gospel. We get this in verse 8. This is a trustworthy saying, and I want you to stress these things so that those who have trusted in God may be careful to devote themselves to doing what is good. These things are excellent and profitable for everyone. And we get it again at the end of our reading, verse 14. Our people must learn to devote themselves to doing what is good in order to provide for urgent needs and not live unproductive lives. If Titus is to stay away from distracting arguments and stay away from divisive people, he is instead to stress the gospel, the good news of Jesus, these things referred to in verse 8. That's what he will teach. And so it's what the Christians he teaches will soak up, absorb, and listen to. Let's just remind ourselves why this message is worth our full attention. Verse 3, as human beings, we're in a bad way. We live for ourselves, and what's more, we can't help ourselves. At times, we're very kind people, but our selfishness keeps on popping up and showing through. But then Jesus appeared on the scene, and so did God's love and kindness. Verse 4. Jesus came on a rescue mission. We hadn't improved to the point where we deserved to be rescued. Not a bit. This was just about God being merciful. Indeed, Jesus died on the cross so that we could be forgiven. He paid for all of it so that it's totally free for us. And so God invites us to trust him. And as we do so, his Spirit gets to work in our hearts deep down. He washes us on the inside and makes us brand new. God declares us not guilty, and the future is even better. And one day Jesus will return, and everyone who trusts him will begin the most wonderful life imaginable, and it will go on forever and ever. It is the best news in the world, and it needs to be talked about over and over, stressed, delighted in, never ever tired of. Think back to the last time you had some good news in your family. A new granddaughter. Your godson has just got a place at university. Your sister promoted at work. Your nephew just got engaged. You're so overwhelmed by the good news that you take every opportunity there is to tell someone. Your neighbours, the hairdresser, the taxi driver who takes you to the station, the person in front of you in the post office queue, random strangers in the street if they will listen. The good news of Jesus is so much better than any of that. So how much more is Titus to stress these things? And here is the point. The arguments were unprofitable and useless. The person spreading novel teaching is divisive, whereas the good news of Jesus Christ is excellent and profitable for everyone. Because having a firm grasp on what God did for us in Jesus is how God transforms our lives to be good. We are changed. Verse 8, we are careful to devote ourselves to doing what is good. Verse 14, we devote ourselves to doing what is good in order to provide for urgent needs and not live unproductive lives. Our lives count for something. The poor among us are cared for. We begin to make a contribution. The church that puts the good news of Jesus Christ at the center of its life will be a great blessing to its community. That message will change and transform us. We'll become like Jesus, and all manner of good things will be achieved. The church that allows itself to be distracted by petty arguments or divided by the latest novel ideas will only focus on itself. The poor will be neglected. The community will not be served because we will all be too busy falling out with each other to have time for such things. And more to the point, we're ignoring the means that God has appointed to transform us into people who are useful, profitable, salt and light, worth having around. And so the church needs to soak up the life-changing gospel. In our teaching, we stress it. We take every chance to listen to it and respond. And we let it get to work to change and transform us. Soak up the life-changing gospel. And so, if we would avoid division, here is what we must do. The good news of Jesus needs to be central. Central in each of our lives, central in each of our families, and above all, central in the life of this church.